In An Unquiet Mind, Kay Redfield Jamison transformed her own anguish into a national bestseller, outing herself as a manic depressive. Her lifelong struggle with the disease had at one point prompted her to attempt suicide. She survived to become an authority on depressive illnesses and self-inflicted death. And that is the subject of her book, Night Falls Fast, Understanding Suicide. Dr. Jamison says the very nature of depression makes it hard for people to seek help.
The thing that is most lethal, of course, is that in depression and in many of the psychiatric illnesses, hopelessness is what pervades the mental framework so that you don't think there's anything that can help you. As you experience it, there's no point. There's nothing that anybody can do for me. I'm at the end of the road. Everything is bleak, dark, and despairing. It's not the sort of thing that you think, oh, I have depression. Depression is a public health problem. Depression is treatable. I will go and get treatment. That's not how you think when you're depressed.
Is there any way to get at that, though? I mean, one of the things that astonished me in your book is the statistics about suicide,
right. That
more young men died in the 1960s of suicide than died in the Vietnam War.
Exactly. And that, you know, I mean, a million people a year worldwide die from suicide. If you look at what causes women's deaths in the age range 15 to 44, the second killer of women, after tuberculosis only, is suicide. We don't think of women in those terms. We don't think of worldwide deaths in those terms. And we've got to start thinking that way. And I think, you know, one of the Surgeon General's calls, Dr. Satcher's call, is, you know, we've got to be aware of the extent of the problem here. You know, every 17 minutes in the United States, someone kills himself.
One of the other statistics that I found disturbing was that if I remember this correctly, more young women attempt suicide, more young men succeed?
Yes, in the United States. In the United States, four times as many men as women complete suicide, and three times as many women attempt suicide.
What do you make
men.
Of that?
Many things. I mean, one thing is that the nature of depression in men may, in fact, be quite different. We know that one of the things that goes into completed suicide is violence, very perturbed, agitated wiring. And it may be that men are more susceptible to this kind of agitated, perturbed wiring. It's also the case that women are more likely to get treatment, actually, for depression than men are. Men are much more likely to start drinking. So if there's ever a case of compounding a problem, if you have depression or manic depression or schizophrenia or severe anxiety disorder and you start drinking, you just increase, you know, manifestly the degree of suicidality by doing that, by drinking, because you disinhibit actions that are generally inhibited, and you also make very definite changes in the brain. You lower serotonin levels even further than most people who commit suicide already have. So you really compound the problem enormously. Another thing is that men have a tendency to use more lethal means than women. They tend to use firearms more, although increasingly and disturbingly in this country, women are using firearms more. In some countries, this isn't true. In China, for example, more women than men commit suicide. And their access to a very lethal means in terms of pesticides is, you know, so something that might be a suicide attempt in this country with an overdose, where you could go to an emergency room, get good medical care, and have a chance at being treated for a mental illness and not commit suicide. In China, if you're out in the fields, you take a pesticide that will kill you very quickly and almost always, and there's no emergency room nearby, there's no medical care that's nearby, then you have a very different situation for women.
What about suicide notes? Do they tell us anything? There are some very famous ones. Virginia Woolf's suicide note, which you quote.
I think they tell us some things. In the case of Virginia Woolf, who, of course, was a writer and who was articulate and able to get down her last thoughts, unlike most people who are very suicidal, she, I think, told us very clearly that her husband was not to blame. Other people were not to blame, that she was not to blame, that she had a very bad illness, in her case, manic depression, that simply was more than she could handle. And at the time that Virginia Woolf died, there really was no effective treatment for manic depression. That's very different now. So I think we do learn things from someone like her note, where she's not saying, you know, it's your fault, you're wicked, you're terrible, you brought me to this. She's saying, I have a bad disease, I cannot cope anymore, I can't write, I can't think, I'm hallucinating. I think other notes, which are much, much more typical, are simply unrevealing in a funny sort of way. I think people like to think that if they had to write a suicide note, they would be very eloquent and they would say, have all sorts of profound last thoughts on the meaning of the universe and the meaning of life and death and so forth. And point of fact, most people who are very depressed don't think real well. And they're very desperate and they haven't the energy and the wherewithal and the cognitive wherewithal to write anything other than, please take care of my dog. My insurance policy is in my drawer. I love you. I couldn't stand it anymore. And what you learn from those notes over and over and over again is a common phrase, I couldn't stand the pain anymore.
One of the saddest, I thought, though, was a boy who hanged himself behind the Christmas tree.
Yes.
And his note simply said, Merry Christmas.
Right. And then that gets again into the unfathomability of it all. What does it mean? I mean, you can interpret that till the cows come home. And you can say it's hostile, it's this, it's that, it's. But at the end of the day, who knows what goes into a young child hanging himself and leaving that kind of note on that kind of season?
It brings us back to the question of what parents can do. How much can you notice? What?
I think you can notice. I think you can educate yourself. I mean, I think that the mental illnesses are something you can learn a lot about. There's a lot known. We're not talking about illnesses for which there's no knowledge base. We know an enormous amount about the illnesses, particularly depression, manic depression, schizophrenia, some of the personality disorders, alcohol and drug abuse. We know a lot about those things, and we know a lot about the symptoms and when they present. We know that kids can get sick. We know that kids will withdraw when they get severely depressed. We know that they will get irritable. We know that the kids who are kind of walking time bombs for suicide are kids who are depressed, withdrawn, highly irritable, volatile, whose grades often are slipping, who are just problematic kids sometimes in terms of temperament. But we also know that these illnesses run in families. These are manic depression, severe depression, schizophrenia, are genetic illnesses. Doesn't mean they're unaffected by the real world or life events, because they clearly are, but they're genetic. So we know often that family histories exist. So parents will have, you know, their parent or brother or sister may have died by suicide, may have been alcoholic, been severely depressed, been in a mental hospital. We need to be honest about those things with our kids. We need to talk about them in a straightforward sort of way, not to frighten them, but just to say, look, this is what our families had some problems with us in the past. These are really treatable problems. This is what it looks like when it shows up, and I really want you to feel free to talk with me about it. Certainly, if you ever have any thoughts about being so sad or unhappy or disturbed that you think about killing yourself or that you don't want to live anymore, you need to talk with me about it, because this can do something about it.
Two things immediately occur to me. One is that it seems to be true that often the best and the brightest suffer the most from the dangers of mental illness like this. The other, I guess, is an issue I know that you have thought a lot about, and that is there a danger in talking too explicitly about suicide and the ways in which others have done it and the ways in which others think?
Right. Well, the first is, yes, the best and the brightest certainly are not immune to severe mental illness. They are not immune to suicide. They're not immune to despair. Most people who commit suicide are not staggeringly brilliant or anything of the sort. One of the most disturbing statistics is that, for example, in young African-American men, often in conditions of poverty, the suicide rate has doubled over the last 15 to 20 years. The suicide rate in 10 to 14-year-olds who, you know, maybe they would be great, maybe they wouldn't be great, but they're certainly not great if they're dying at 14. Suicides occur in all classes and in all conditions. It is a common cause of death. 1 out of 100 people will die that way. So it's not just the best and the brightest, although there is some evidence that they are disproportionately affected by some of the mental illnesses and disproportionately affected by suicide. In terms of discussing it, I think there's a difference between sensationalizing and romanticizing suicide in stories that one can write about individual deaths that might have some small possibility of influencing the time of death of very vulnerable other people. It's another thing not to talk about suicide, which I think is completely irresponsible on the part of our society, is not to say this is a major problem, an epidemic in our midst, an epidemic we can do something about. That is, you know, I don't see how that can cause deaths. I think that can only be a healthy sort of thing, not to romanticize it, not to sensationalize it, to destigmatize not suicide, but to destigmatize the illnesses associated with suicide. Say, look, these are problems. Our young people are dying by this. Our elderly are dying by this. We've really got to do something.
Kay Redfield Jamison teaches psychiatry at Johns Hopkins Medical School, and she's the author of Night Falls Fast, Understanding Suicide.